You're listening to Radio Diaries. This is Joe, and I have some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Ear Hustle is back with a new season. Hosts Nigel Poor and Earlonne Woods are bringing you unique, surprising stories from four California prisons. This season, they have some truly interesting perspectives. You'll hear from people who are so comfortable in prison that they no longer want to be free. And you'll hear from mothers of inmates about the complicated reality of having adult children in prison. The show is full of candid interviews and thought-provoking conversations, and it just keeps getting better. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts and at earhustlesq.com. This episode of Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Radiotopia.
From PRX.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. I'm Joe Richman. Laura Rothenberg spent most of her life knowing that she was going to die young. She had cystic fibrosis, a genetic disorder that affects the lungs. And when she was born, the life expectancy for people with CF was around 18 years. It's more than double that now. But Laura liked to say that she went through her midlife crisis when she was a teenager. I met Laura when she was 19. I gave her a tape recorder, and for 2 years she kept an audio diary of her battle with cystic fibrosis and her attempts to live a normal life with lungs that often betrayed her. Sometimes she wouldn't record anything for a few months, and then there were days when she hardly turned the tape recorder off. Over those 2 years, Laura recorded more than 40 hours of tape. Today on the show, we're revisiting Laura's story. This is My So-Called Lungs.
Hi, this is Laura. It's about 11:02 p.m. I'm here in the hospital. I've been here for 5 days now. I'm in room 1004 this time. That's me coughing. Hello.
Hi.
This is Karina. She's one of my favorite nurses. Yeah, we can put that. I have a sort of status in the hospital. They don't even say my last name. It's like, oh, Laura's coming in. You know, I've seen patients come and go, and I've seen nurses come and go. I've seen medical students become interns, become attendings. It's like my hotel. Okay, Karina's gonna stick me 22 3/4 needle. In we go. I don't feel a thing. Ooh, that hurts. I don't have to be on death's door to go into the hospital. We got a blood return. Now we're flushing it. Nice blood return. Now we're flushing. They call them tune-ups. It's almost like you charge the battery on your cell phone. And now we're going to hook me up back to my antibiotics. Yeah, that was quick. Easy. No pain. Phew!
I'll be back.
Thanks. Get back into bed here. My nice, comfy electric bed. I was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis when I was 3 days old. It was 1981, and I guess at that time, my parents really didn't know how long I would end up living. The average lifespan of a person with CF was much younger than it is now. When I was 12 and 13, I met a lot of kids in the hospital with CF. There was sort of like a whole gang, you know, there were all the CF kids. And we just play cards and talk dirt about the nurses and watch TV shows at night, ride down the hall on IV poles. There was just this sort of bond, you know. Gina died when we were 13. Damien died that year, he was 17. Nikki Cooley died, Tamisha died. Elizabeth Florin died winter of 12th grade. My friend Sophie died when I was in 11th grade. She was one of my best friends with CF. And my friend Marcy died this past summer. Do you hear how quiet it is? This is the sort of after hours. Calm. Everyone's asleep. I like nights in the hospital. Good night. This is Laura, back again. Dad and I are on the Bruckner. We're driving up to Providence. I agreed to let him drive. I just spent about 4 or 5 days in the hospital again for a partial bowel obstruction, so that was thrilling as ever. And luckily, it was only a partial obstruction, so they were really excited about that. But of course, at the moment, I wasn't as excited because I had a tube in my butt, and it's a little bit hard to be excited when you have a tube in your butt. Wouldn't you say, Dad? Why are you crying?
Well, I mean, it's hard to talk about this, you know, not knowing what's going to happen next. And you go ahead with your life as best you can. Pause it for a second.
So, now for a little lesson. Here's the deal with CF. Basically, your body produces abnormally thick, sticky mucus that resides in the lungs. And the lungs are sort of the deadly part of the disease in that after years of infection, the lungs sort of get worn away and deteriorate. Most people who see me on the street wouldn't realize how much harder I work to breathe, or even people who know me don't really realize it, because over the years I've got better and better at sort of hiding the fact that I have trouble breathing. It's funny, sometimes I cough so hard that I can see stars. So I'm back here at Brown. Classes started on Wednesday.
Take care. Yeah, thanks. Good to see you.
I think that people who know me, who really know me, who are my friends, don't see me as someone who is sick. They see me as Laura, you know, who's a sophomore at Brown, and it's hard for them to imagine, you know, oh, she might not be here in a few years. They know I have CF. They know that it means that you get very sick and that you die. But they see me, and it's hard for them to make it real because they don't want to, because no one wants to, because, you know, they want me to live forever because I'm their friend. The truth is that even though I'm always thinking about health-related stuff, I don't want to come off as someone who's purely thinking about health-related stuff. I think that's kind of boring.
I'm actually wearing my oxygen just because it's easier for me to breathe with this on. So that's why I'm wearing the oxygen. I'm not feeling very well. The past week, I get into these really bad coughing fits, and I just have trouble, you know, walking, just feeling kind of tired. I don't know, it's frustrating. And even though people say that it's supposed to get so much worse, I don't quite understand how I'm expected to just watch it get worse. Like this is not okay, the fact that I'm in on a Friday night. I mean, I'm in college, I'm 19. I should have gone to this play I was supposed to go to. I should have gone to these two parties I was invited to. But instead I'm here. It's just frustrating. I want to be like my peers, but I don't know how. Anyway, I think I'm gonna go to bed.
Hi. It's a couple days after my birthday, so I'm 20.
It just sort of all hit me today. I was lying on the couch in the living room, and the sun was setting. And I just knew it. And it was at that moment that I really felt that I wouldn't be alive at New Year's. The last few weeks, I definitely have felt that I was starting the dying process. And it's just a matter of when, how fast, how much at a time. It didn't make sense to push the limit, try to see how long I could last with these old lungs. So I decided I'm gonna try the lung transplant. You know, there are risks with it. The obvious one, of course, being if it doesn't go well and I die. But I didn't want to just go downhill without trying to stop it first.
We'll continue with my so-called lungs after this message. This episode of the Radio Diaries podcast has support from Lightstream. It's January, which means it's time to kick off your New Year's resolutions, and today you can resolve to get out of credit card debt. Pay off your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. You can even roll multiple cards into just one payment at a lower fixed rate. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates as low as 5.95% APR with autopay. Plus, there are no transaction fees or prepayment penalties. The application is free and easy, and you can apply right from your phone. And if you apply now, Radio Diaries listeners can get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is go to lightstream.com/diaries. I'll spell that out, lightstream.com/diaries. And now for the fine print. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.5% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/diaries for more information. Now, back to my so-called lungs.
Wait, where is she right now? Wait, so we're waiting till she takes the box off, and then we're saying
yes.
Surprise?
Okay.
All my friends came to this lung retirement party.
We are gathered here this evening just to send Laura off with a hurrah as she leaves Brown temporarily as a student.
Well, I've decided to leave college and go up to Boston. That's where the hospital is, and wait there for my transplant. I have the poster that my friend designed that says, "Thank you to the lungs of Laura for 20 years of exemplary service." So that's kind of neat.
Well, that's a wrap.
Hello? Julie? Hi. Yeah, I haven't talked to you in a long time. Oh, it's okay. You know, I'm sort of just sitting here waiting for lungs. Yeah, but they've had what they're calling a lung drought. You know, there's nothing I can do to make it happen. You know, short of going out and hitting someone with a car. Yeah, I do. Okay, I'll talk to you soon. Love you. Bye. Mom? Mom? My dad and my mom are very worried. They wish they could do something, but we don't spend a lot of time talking about it.
I remember, even when you were younger, before even the question of the transplant came up, I watched you, you know, go through this. I watched you get very ill. Still, I have never really been able to experience what you've been experiencing, and at times, you know, had no idea what you were going through.
I remember that we were always wondering about how to talk with you about what the disease meant, and it never seemed to be the right moment with any particular reason to throw this at you. And then there was this particular time when there was something on the news about cystic fibrosis, and you were...
I was 11.
You were 11, and you told me that, Dad, this will probably be in the paper tomorrow, and why don't you cut it out for me, and I'll read it on the school bus. So I went to the paper, and exactly what I feared had happened. In the last sentence, it said, cystic fibrosis is the most common genetic disease, and the average life expectancy is 18 years or 21 years or whatever it was. So I thought, I can't have my daughter read this on the school bus, go on the school bus and read this, that she's going to die at an early age like this, because by now you would understand what it meant. And so I thought to myself, I've got 10 minutes to tell my daughter she's going to die. And I went in the kitchen.
And I was sitting there eating.
You were having your Cheerios. And right. I said to you, Laura, you know this illness you have, the cystic fibrosis, it's a serious illness. And such was the tone in my voice that you kind of got it immediately. And you became very tremulous. And you said, you mean I'm going to die? And when you said it in that tone of voice, I completely broke down. And I was crying, and I said to you, which was true, that it's my dream that you should outlive me. And at this point, it was really remarkable. You were, put her arm around me, and began to comfort me. I got a phone call that afternoon that said, Dad, that article, the point of that article is that there's hope, isn't it? Isn't that what the point is? And I said, yes, Laura, that's the point of it. So.
I remember that conversation.
You've reached Laura. The news this 15th of July is that Laura is today having her lung transplant.
Well, it's about 10 to 8 in the morning. I'm here in the hospital. The sun has just come up, and the animal curtains are pulled across my window, but there's just a little bit of light showing through into my room, and it's shining on my toes.
Hi there. I need to try to get you upstairs.
You know, this surgery's gonna happen, and it's weird. When I go in the OR, I always like to look at all the monitors when I'm lying on the table, and all the faces and the lights. Lights are really bright. There's sort of this feeling of, once the anesthetic is in, everything sort of hazing out, forcing you to close your eyes. And I always try to keep my eyes open as long as I possibly can to remember the last moment that I was awake. And it's so hard to do that. It always wins out.
You have one message.
Hi, my name is Lauren. I'm a friend of Laura Rothenberg's. She came out of the surgery well last night. She has beautiful new lungs, and more updates will come. All right, bye-bye.
That sound. Those were my new lungs. And this is a picture. It's in the OR, and they're taking the lungs out of the ice, and it's a close-up, and it's in like a metal basin type thing. It's my lungs. Up close, it just looks like a turkey, basically.
Bye, thank you. Good luck with everything. Thanks.
I'm leaving the hospital after 19 days, and it's very exciting.
Thanks so much for all your help.
Good to hear. Most people ask, how does it feel? Like, how does it feel different to breathe? And it's funny because it feels like a completely different body. Sort of everything about it seems new. I don't know it like I knew my body before. It's like a whole new ball game. This is Laura, and I'm sitting here with my cat, Gus, who's asleep. I haven't talked in a while. On Monday, it'll be a year since my lung transplant. So I'm happy I've made it a year. But it was not the year that I dreamed of. Complication after complication after surgery after surgery and rejection and lymphoma. I've had to get a feeding tube put back in because I've lost so much weight. You know, I think to get to the transplant, I really had to pretend that the transplant would do more than it realistically could do for me. My whole life, I've been searching for something to fix me, and it hasn't. I definitely think about after I'm gone. I've always been scared that people will forget about me. But I'm also here right now. So it's about trying to come to a place where I can just accept that things have gone the way they've gone and accept that it's never going to be perfect. You know, I'm well enough to go back to school. I'll be a junior. You know, I want to walk from my dorm to the main green, maybe even play soccer, which I haven't done for like 8 years, you know. But I don't really count on anything anymore. I just go with the flow. I think that's okay.
That was My So-Called Lungs, the audio diary of Laura Rothenberg. It originally aired on NPR in 2003. I remember one of the things that was challenging about producing Laura's diary was how should the story end? At the time, it felt right to both of us that her story ended where it did, with a bit of guarded optimism. But a year and a half after her lung transplant, it became clear to the doctors, to her family, and to Laura that the new lungs were failing and there was no more fixing to be done. She left the hospital to spend the time she had left at her new home, the apartment that she was renting with her boyfriend Brian. For someone who had spent so much of her life either in the hospital or under her parents' care, Brian and the apartment represented an independent life, the kind 22-year-olds are supposed to have. In her final months, Laura carefully planned how she would be remembered. She put together a collection of her poetry. She wrote a memoir that would end up being published after she died. It was called Breathing for a Living. She also organized her own memorial service. She decided she would be cremated and her ashes would be scattered into the ocean where she had gone as a kid. And she said goodbye to more than 100 friends and relatives with a detailed appointment calendar. Here's Laura from the very last tape she recorded for her diary.
I definitely think about after I'm gone. When I was younger, I used to try and plan my funeral, where I'd want it, how many people I'd want to be there, what it would be like. I've always been scared that people will forget about me. 8 years go by and, you know, someone who's died isn't the first person you think of when you wake up, necessarily. But I'll find a way so that people don't forget about me. You know, I'll give friends things of mine that they'll always have.
Laura Rothenberg died 17 years ago. Recently, I went to talk to her mom.
My name is Mary Rothenberg. I'm Laura's mother. Her birthday is February 3rd, so she would be, what, 39? A lot of her friends that I see have babies now and are in big positions in different places, so they've all grown up, yeah.
Part of what her story was about was how unique it was to have to think about death as a teenager. Mm. How do you think it shaped her personality, who she was, that she had this disease?
I think that because she knew her life was limited, she had a much larger perspective than most people. That's what I think. Knowing about death made her really want to live much more each moment rather than just each week or each month or each year. She really looked forward to being in life as much as she could.
How does talking about her make you feel? With a microphone and, you know, in the setting, like an interview?
I don't speak about her very often with anyone. No one talks about her, so it's nice for me. In talking with you, it just brings out more memories. It's helpful. I like talking about her. It took me 8 years after she died, before I didn't remember her every day. It was 8 years. And now I just think I was very lucky to be blessed, you could say, with this person. And because one rarely meets someone like her. There just aren't people like her.
What do you mean there aren't people like her?
Well, she knew what she was facing, but at the same time, she really threw herself into living. And most people, when they have difficulties, don't do that, but she did. She really tried to live her life. For me, that's the most important thing. Even though it was very difficult and painful when she left us, I just think how lucky I was to have this wonderful girl come into my life.
Before we go, one final note. People with cystic fibrosis have long been hoping for a drug that could treat the disease, and it may finally be here. A few months ago, the FDA approved a new treatment called Trikafta that will hopefully allow most people with CF to manage the disease and live normal lives, with a life expectancy the same as the rest of us. Radio Diaries is produced by me, Joe Richman, with Sarah Kate Kramer and Nellie Gillis. Our editors are Deborah George and Ben Shapiro. Radio Diaries is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, and you can hear all the Radiotopia shows at radiotopia.fm. We have support from the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and from listeners just like you. I'm Joe Richman. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia from PRX.